Alrighty, how you doing? It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. Lomas Brown is going to join us 20 minutes from now as we'll preview the Detroit Lions season. But first, we have to get to all the latest in college football, where you know by now Washington and Oregon will be off to the Big Ten. You already knew that USC and UCLA next year are joining the Big Ten. And when you look at the Big 12, who you'll see this year, BYU and Cincinnati and Houston and UCF play Big 12 football. Next year, Colorado going there, back to the Big 12. And you will also now see Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah leave the Pac-12 pretty much down to the Pac-4. And there's been some reports that the ACC could be interested, or at least exploring maybe bringing Cal and Stanford over, and then we'll find out what happens with Oregon State and Washington State as well. But you are starting to see, or you've seen, the Pac-12 be the Power 5 conference that has been left in the corner, where the Big Ten makes their big move to go get USC and UCLA. The SEC made their big move to go get Texas and Oklahoma. And after that, it was the ACC has some stability, clearly, with some of the teams in there. You know, Florida State wants a bigger piece of the TV pie, but they're going to have to pay their way out. I don't think they're going to do that right now in order to leave. So the ACC for now is okay. They're in a fine spot. But it was going to be between the Big 12 or Pac-12, who was going to fold and who was going to be sit there and in a staring contest, who was going to be the team that blinks first to go make that move. And I'll give credit to the last two Big 12 commissioners, who they were aggressive. They said, we will pluck three American Athletic Conference schools and we'll go get them. We'll also add BYU as well, which has done a nice job under Kalani Sitake. And from there, Colorado's not this great program, obviously, but if they want back in, we'll just take people because we need numbers to survive. So they did a good job for now to survive and then somewhat thrive, and we'll see long-term what it becomes. But the Pac-12 was left sitting there banking on Apple and this really not desirable deal where you get a flat fee and then it's based off how many subscriptions, where it wasn't all that desirable, and you never gave an incentive for other Pac-12 schools to stay. Because you could have lost USC and UCLA and still found a way to maintain your conference. And I know that's an enormous loss losing USC and UCLA, but we just saw the Big 12 earlier than you two lose Texas and Oklahoma, which print so much money. So if the Big 12 was able to survive, it was because they found a way to answer the question, how are you going to survive as quick as possible? Where the Pac-12 just thought the brand of the Pac-12 was going to last. Where if you've been following this for the last few years, I know people are going to bitch about geography and how does it make sense. We've already had this argument. It's all about following the money. And the Big 12 did a good enough job in just getting teams to join them when we thought it was a sinking ship. The Pac-12 had a sinking ship and no one on the Pac-12 said, we need help, come save us. So that's why you see the Pac-12 be where it is right now and the Big 12 be where it is right now, and it's two totally different outcomes. And if you are one of these four remaining Pac-12 schools, don't wait, right, for them to try to form with the Mountain West. You have to operate what's in the best interest of yourself. And the death of the Pac-12 wasn't USC and UCLA leaving. Because we've seen, as I just said, the Big 12 lose Texas and Oklahoma. The death was really, and the most ironic thing ever, Colorado going back to the Big 12 being the death blow. Because not because you really lose anything, but if Colorado said, we're going to operate what's in the best interest of ourselves, why would any of the other Pac-12 schools not do that as well? And Washington and Oregon will eventually become, from a TV standpoint, more lucrative, where they're not going to get that immediate right away. I think it's like $30 million for now. And if you're Washington and Oregon, it wasn't that you got cold feet, regardless of what was being said on Friday. It was the Big Ten going to finally extend that offer? And they waited, but they eventually did. And once that happened, There was no way Arizona and Arizona State and Utah, they could all say that they were surprised. There's no way that there was any reason for them to stay in the Pac-12. So that's what you have going on right now. And ultimately, it will lead to three different sectors of college football, where you have the Big Ten, you have the SEC, the two enormous conferences out of what was the Pac-5, and eventually schools will leave the ACC. And then once that happens, where schools leave the ACC, it's going to be inevitable that the Big 12, the ACC, and, you know, you can forget about the Pac-12 because they're dead, but whatever remains years from now, and I know the ACC TV deal expires in 2036, where whoever doesn't join the Big Ten and the SEC, who will be selective, they'll come together, and that's how we'll operate in what was, used to be a Power Five, really then down to three schools where it's really two power conferences and then everybody else. So that's the latest with college football. Also today, we got our first coaches poll of the year. And I was curious, after Georgia, how this would play out. Because Georgia, in a year where we really don't know what to expect from college football, Georgia winning the last 2 years, and after winning their first championship with all they lost, them coming back stronger, they deserve to be number one. And they're the school now, not Alabama, that everyone is hunting in college football. So I was curious, and it's just a coach's poll, but how these teams were going to fall in order. And if you've been listening to this show all season long, I said on paper, Georgia's the best team, right? They deserve to be the best team in college football. But if you want to look at the team that maybe, from a talent perspective, could be right there, it's Michigan. Because Michigan, you get McCarthy back, you get Blake Corum back, you get Donovan Edwards back. They've been able to produce enough talent on the defensive side of the ball. Remember, 2 years ago, they lose Ojabo and Hutchinson. Everyone's like, how are they going to be defensively? They were fine defensively last year. So Michigan, even though they've had shortcomings the last 2 years where they finally get over the hump, crush Ohio State, win the Big Ten, but then the college football playoff, get embarrassed by Georgia, and then just did not come to play early on up against TCU, they now have an opportunity to take the next step. And that's to get to the national championship game while it still remains four teams and win a national championship. So I like Michigan being at two. I'm not going to crush the coaches for putting Alabama three. And a month and a half, 2 months ago, I would say Alabama deserves to be the second team in the SEC. And you look, though, at last year, Alabama's not in the SEC championship game. And LSU, Brian Kelly, everyone clowned him a year ago. My family and the cringeworthy TikTok dances. You know, Brian Kelly and Hickey actually have a lot in common when it comes to social media. Because Brian Kelly puts out some cringeworthy posts. If you have no clue what I'm talking about, Hickey with the shower no cap videos, hot take Hickey, where he's posting videos of him in the shower. And then I saw a photo of Hickey, who's at a bachelor party, and he's not here today. That's why we have Chris Hess with us. And hot take Hickey is rocking a mustache. And let me tell you, if I saw Hickey walking down the street, I'm dialing 911. Because he looks very creepy. And the mustache was unevenly cut, where the left side is stronger than the right side. So Brian Kelly and hot take Hickey put out a lot of cringeworthy content, but you can't disagree with the results, I guess. Now, Brian Kelly does a lot more winning than hot take Hickey, but look at what Brian Kelly did last year. He found a way to get into an SEC championship game. Now, he lost to Georgia, but you have maybe the best defensive player in the conference back, and maybe the best defensive player in college football, and you have your quarterback back as well. And there's uncertainty who's going to start for Alabama at the quarterback position. You lose Will Anderson, you lose Bryce Young. Personally, I would put LSU above Alabama. Now, you look at the rest of it. Ohio State, once again, it's the same thing I just said about LSU. I would go LSU 3 if I did this, Alabama 4, and then I would put Ohio State 5th. And Ohio State and Alabama are both similar, where Ohio State, they have a ton of talent at wide receiver, but there's major question marks at what is going to be able to, what are they going to be able to look like at the quarterback position. Now, after that, I don't want to say the rest of it is irrelevant, because it's not. USC is in at 6. It's easy to say USC is going to have a great season. They lost to Utah twice last year, where they couldn't protect the lead. And we know that they have the reigning Heisman Trophy winner and already going to be the number one overall pick in next year's draft in Caleb Williams. But my big concern about USC, which is in the final year of, I'll say, the Pac-12, and the Pac-12 has a loaded quarterback class. And a big difference here, I'm not saying all these other schools are great defensively, but USC doesn't play a lick of defense. And I don't know how much is going to change this year. Well, you know they'll be able to put up a ton of points, but is Lincoln Riley, with Grinch there, going to have enough on defense? And I don't think they will. And you look at that conference, USC's in at 6, Washington, who gets Michael Penix back, and he's healthy, in at 11. You have Utah at 14. We'll see what happens with the health of Cam Rising with that late injury that he suffered up against Penn State. You got Oregon at 15. Bo Nix is back, and Bo Nix changed his storyline last year. You got a lot cooking there in the Pac-12. So everyone's picking USC. Yes, going into the year, I'm okay, and it's a sexy pick, but I will take the field in the Pac-12, USC against the field. Penn State's in at 7. I never give Penn State any compliments. You know, I'm disgusted today that one Penn Stater is in here in Hot Take Hickey, and they give me another Penn Stater in Chris Hess. I can't escape Penn State.
Ouch.
Sorry, it's just the truth.
Ouch.
You go to Penn State, I look at you differently. I always expect you to be up to something, you're just going to find a way to cause some pain in my life. Now, I look at these Penn Staters, I get very skeptical. You guys are all a part of this cult. Now, I will say, I love your athletic director in Pat Kraft. Love Pat Kraft. Hate your defensive coordinator's guts in Manny Diaz and James Franklin. If it wasn't for Jimbo Fisher, would be the most overrated coach in college football. And I know last year, I'll give credit to Franklin. They did a solid job. But this year, James Franklin, with all the talent that Penn State has, and listen to me right here, folks, because this may be the last time I ever say it. I'm optimistic about Penn State this year because I'm fair. Even though I can't stand them, I'm fair. They have a really good team on paper. Now, Michigan is what everyone's hunting. Most people will say Ohio State's too in the Big Ten. For Penn State, and you know this, Chris Hess, their schedule outside of Ohio State and Michigan, bunch of cupcakes. And that speaks a little bit about the Big Ten. If James Franklin, who is Mr. Recruit, 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 and then when the games happen, I know he's won a Big Ten championship there. For the most part, top 10 teams, top 5 teams, his record is putrid. His record is about as putrid as Hickey's mustache that I saw on social media.
Spot on.
You have to, bare minimum, I'm not even saying you have to beat both Michigan and Ohio State. You have to beat one of them.
Exactly. You got to split with either one of them, and it doesn't matter who. I don't care who they beat, who they lose to. They can get 11 wins. Awesome. And I will say this also. What Franklin lacked in those 2 years, the Big Ten championship year and the year after, what they lacked was offensive line.
Oh, yeah. I saw the career of Christian Hackenberg come to an end.
It was terrible.
In South Philadelphia, where Temple finally beat them for the first time in 74 years. Sackenberg.
As did I. That was awful.
Oh, were you?
I was
you were
at that game, and it was awful.
Yeah. And you know what? I actually, in the media world, we now consider Christian Hackenberg a friend of the show. Oh, I called that guy Sackenberg. I used to have so much fun. He used to be the punchline of every joke, but then he came on the show. I told him that, and he was cool about it. But you look at that Penn State schedule. West Virginia, their coach is about to get fired. Delaware. It's a disgrace that Hickey's even going to that game. Illinois. Iowa. Northwestern, UMass. If you're a Penn State fan, Chris Hess, and I don't know your relationship status, but let's just say you have some obligations on a Saturday, go do your obligations then. You know, go do your chores, go apple picking or whatever, because West Virginia, Delaware, Illinois, Iowa, Northwestern, UMass, you lose one of those games,
it's over.
But then the season gets started October 21st at Ohio State. Then after that, Indiana, eh. Maryland, they have a good offense with Talia Tungavailoa, but eh. Then you play Michigan, you play Rutgers, PU, and then Michigan State, which Michigan State, Mel Tucker was the greatest thing 2 years ago. Now the guy is not worth the $90 million, $100 million that they gave him. You have two games this year. You got to split, and then don't lose a game that
you get surprised by a team because you get lazy or you overlook them.
The Illinois and the Maryland games, I think, are the ones, if anything, they would get surprised. But at the same time,
it's a joke if they lose them.
Exactly. I don't think they lose to Maryland because Maryland's lines of scrimmage are awful.
Yeah.
Especially the defensive line. Illinois's got a very good, they're very good on the line of scrimmage. Illinois, I will give them that. Luke Altmyer, quarterback, okay. Chase Brown, gone. If you just stop Illinois' bread and butter, which is literally running the ball, that's all they do with Brett Bielema. Yeah. Stop them a little bit. You could score 21 in the game and be fine.
Now, the rest of the coaches' poll, I know Clemson won the ACC last year, but going into this season, I like where Mike Norvell's team is at. They put Florida State 8, Clemson 9. Tennessee, everyone talks about the arm of the quarterback in Joe Milton, who used to be at Michigan, and we saw him a little bit at Tennessee, and then we saw Hendon Hooker, what he was able to do. We'll see how great that system is of Josh Heupel this year. And then we talked about it, Washington at 11. The first Big 12 team is Texas. Everyone's hyping up Texas. We'll talk more about Texas later as we welcome a new affiliate, The Horn. I'm actually believing in the Texas hype, and I never do just in terms of them emerging in the Big 12. Notre Dame's at 13. I like bringing in Sam Hartman, Marcus Freeman year two, and then you get some Pac-12 teams in there, back-to-back Utah and Oregon. TCU's going to take a step back. They're in at 16. I like what Klieman has done at Kansas State. They're 17. Oregon State with DJ Uiagalelei now in at 18. We'll see if he could bounce back, getting away from Clemson. Oklahoma, big year for Venables. And at 19, you still have Gabriel Drake May, who is the projected second quarterback off the board, maybe even the second overall pick in the draft, with UNC and Mack Brown in at 20. Wisconsin, someone's got to win that division. And Luke Fickell's a heck of a coach. He got Cincinnati to a college football playoff there in at 21. Kiffin, we'll see who's going to be his quarterback at Ole Miss. In at 22, Tulane, who won the American Athletic Conference last year, in at 23. I like Joey McGuire, Texas Tech, in at 24. And if you are an A&M fan, them being in at 25, they have so much talent. But Jimbo Fisher last year was a disgrace. And they bring in Bobby Petrino. He's going to call the plays. He's not going to call the plays. We all know he's going to call the plays. I think that's a sign for A&M fans where on paper, you could have the fourth best teams, you know, in the SEC, but you're only at 25. Let me tell you right now, I do not expect A&M to have this monster season. They should win some games because they have so much talent, but at the end of the year, I don't think many people are going to be clamoring for Jimbo Fisher to be back, and you know what the buyout is, and that's the only reason why he's back for this year and also the recruiting class that he's put together. Wigman's going to have to be a heck of a quarterback for them, but they're not going to win games this year because of Jimbo Fisher's in-game coaching.
They're going to have to win 9 games minimum for him to save his job.
You know what,
though?
I agree in terms of if he doesn't do that with the talent that they have, you should be right. But the buyout on that contract is so big.
Oil money, baby. Let's go.
I understand that. It's still a lot of digging that you got to do to get out of that deal. But their schedule, they play New Mexico. You should beat them. Miami, people don't. I like Cristobal, but Miami so far is not a team that you should lose to. Louisiana Monroe, Auburn, all right. Hugh Freeze, year one, got a lot of talent there. Arkansas, I like KJ Jefferson and Sam Pittman, but you got more right there. Alabama, tough game. Tennessee, South Carolina, I like Beamer, and you have Rattler there. Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Abilene Christian. Cupcake, LSU. So you should definitely beat New Mexico, Miami, Louisiana Monroe, and then Abilene Christian. Then you have your tough SEC schedule of Arkansas, Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee, South Carolina, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and LSU. That's 8 games. I don't think they'll go 5-3 in that 8, but with the talent that they have, I don't want to hear these excuses if you're not 5-3 in those 8 games. We got to take a break on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. When we come on back, we'll do a little first and goal, previewing the Detroit Lions with their former offensive lineman, Lomas Brown.
Now back to the Zach Gelb Show. The NFL season is inching closer and closer. Who are the contenders and who are the pretenders? We have 4 downs to figure out your team's future. It's time now for First and Goal on the Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, time to discuss one of the more talked about teams in the NFL entering the 2023 season, and that, of course, are the Detroit Lions. And we'll do so right now with a former Lions offense lineman, does their games on the Lions radio network, and that is Lomas Brown, always kind enough to join us on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Lomas, appreciate the time as always. How you been?
I'm great, Zach. How you doing today?
Well, I'm doing fantastic, so I'm excited for this year of Detroit Lions football. I got to start you off, though, going back to the draft at the end of the month in April. A lot of people were surprised when the Lions selected Jahmyr Gibbs with the 12th overall pick. What did you make of that selection, and how do you kind of think of it a few months later?
Yeah, I was one of those people that was really surprised when they called this name. But, man, after watching this guy at training camp and some of the things that you see what Ben Johnson, our offensive coordinator, is going to do with him, how he's going to incorporate him not just only in that run game but incorporate him in the pass game, you know, he's going to be a weapon for us. And we know with Jameson Williams serving the six-game suspension, we can use as many weapons out there on the field as we can get. So very excited to see him get his action. And very excited to see how Ben Johnson is going to utilize him in this offense this year.
So I like Jahmyr Gibbs. I was surprised, like you were, that he was selected with the 12th overall pick. We know Amon-Ra St. Brown is an excellent wide receiver as well. Everybody else, do the Lions have enough for Jared Goff once you get away from Gibbs and Amon-Ra St. Brown?
I think we do. I really think we do. I mean, look, Sam Laporta, we know he's a rookie, but he has been impressive in training camp. Of course, you know, we're going to miss Shane Zelstra, our tight end that we just lost for the year, who we put on IR. And then you got guys like Marvin Jones. You got Trinity Benson. We got a quality receiving core that's coming back. And to me, like I tell anybody, when you got the offensive line that we got, you could plug and play anybody behind them. So I think we have one of the best offensive lines in the league. So, again, to me, I think we do have enough on the offensive side of the ball to make some real noise this year.
We know Jameson Williams is not available for most of last season, had that one big catch for a touchdown. You mentioned the six-game suspension because of gambling. When he gets back, what do you think we're going to see from Jameson Williams as their high expectations, but so far mixed reviews?
Yeah, it is high expectations, and you're right. The productivity has matched the expectations, and it hasn't. And it's been various reasons, like you stated, the injury, and now with the suspension. We just want to see him play meaningful football. I mean, we know he's been teasing us, man. We know what the guy can do. We know what we've seen with all that speed out on the field. And like I said, we know what the creator offensive coordinator that we have. So we just got to be – we just need Jameson to go through this suspension that he's going to go. But he has to stay on top of his preparation. He has to hit the ground, ready to run, when he gets his opportunity in week 7.
Let's get to the next down. Lomas Brown here with us. Jared Goff has impressed people. I don't think anyone believed that he'd probably still be the starting quarterback of the Lions when they made that trade a few years ago. What's your read on the Lions quarterback entering this season?
Yeah, he's been fantastic, man. He ended the season as one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and I think he's just carried over that momentum. He's been very, very great in camp so far. He's been, you know, you could just see that the progression now with him is so much quicker. You can see that the game is slowed down for him, and it's kind of crazy to be able to say that about a veteran, but you can tell it's slowed down. Jared's out there. He's doing his reads, going through his proper reads. He's making the proper throws. He's leading this team, and that's what we're going to need if the Lions are going to get to where they want to get at this year, which is, I think, you have to win the division this year.
When you look at the future of Goff, Lomas Brown, he still has a few years left under contract, an unrestricted free agent in 2025. They drafted Hendon Hooker because he fell because of the ACL injury. Do you think that Goff is in a long-term plan and they'll eventually get an extension ironed out here? Or is there still more to be seen from the quarterback?
You know, I'm quite sure there's more to be seen, but I think he's deserved an extension here. I really do. I think Jared is young, 28 years old, I think he is. You know, he's a guy that's accomplished a lot in this league, early in this league. He's a guy that's continuously growing. He's a guy that I think you can plug and play, put guys around him. And he's a natural-born leader, man. I've heard nothing but positive things from the teammates about Jared. And to me, you need a guy like that, a guy that came in when things were real rocky with this organization. I think he steadied the ship with the organization. So a guy that comes in and can do that, you should. And I hope the Lions do have a tendency of rewarding that guy because I think he deserves it.
Let's get to the next down. Lomas Brown here with us. Going to the other side of the ball with the defense, Aiden Hutchinson had a phenomenal rookie year. We know other pieces as well that shined in 2022, but the defense got better down the stretch. With the success that they had at the end of the season, how do you think the defense carries over now into 2023?
Man, I tell you what, Aaron Glenn, he's out there pushing those guys. He really is. I mean, to watch him out there working with that defense each and every day, some of the things that he's incorporating with that defense, and just to see the growth of our second-year guys. I mean, you brought up Aiden Hutchinson. You know, you got Malcolm Rodriguez, a guy that had a phenomenal rookie year that you want to see grow. Jerry Jacobs, another guy, young guy, that had a great year that you want to see continuously grow. And then you got the young guys and some of the guys that we brought in, the C.J. Gardner. You know, you got the Alabama.
Brian Branch.
Yes, Brian Branch that we brought in. You know, you got a lot of guys that are in their second year, third year, guys that are still improving, still trying to prove that they belong in this game, and it's great to see. So I think Aaron Glenn has the attention of this defense. I think this defense is ready to take that next step to becoming just a better defense than they were last year.
Let's get to the final down. Lomas Brown here with us. Former offensive lineman in the NFL, was a great Detroit Lion, does their games on the radio. You talked about earlier the expectation for this team. A lot of people are picking them to win this NFC North. How do you think they'll handle those expectations this upcoming season?
Yeah, that's been great. You're right. And look, Zach, I don't hear Super Bowl. That word is being thrown around here with a lot of our fans. So a lot of our fans, they skip the division title. They skip winning the playoff game, which we haven't done in 30-some-odd years. They've gone straight to the Super Bowl. So you know the anticipation. You know the excitement. You know everything, the hoopla that's going on around there. I think Dan has been I think he's been feeding the right message to those guys that, hey, we haven't done anything yet, which they haven't. You know, it's nice to have the hype. It's nice to have this all behind you. But you got to go out there and you got to win. So until they get that done, until we win a game, win a playoff game, and prove that we're not the same old Lions, you know, it's, I think these guys are ready for that challenge. We'll only know when we lace it up against Kansas City on Thursday night. But I do think Dan has the attention on this team, and they're following his lead.
You know, I was talking about this the other day, what the expectation should be bare minimum for the Lions. And at first we were like, all right, it's to win the division because everyone's picking them. But they just got to make the playoffs this year. Like, Lions fans, they're not going to be bummed if they're the seventh seed in the wild card, right?
Yeah, and I do think we got to win one. I think okay. We got to win one. I mean, it'll be great to get in there, but Zach, 31 years, 32 years since we won a playoff game. I think we have to win one this year.
And I'm really curious to see inside that division because the Bears, they're not ready. I think the Packers will be better than what people expect, but they have a big question mark with Jordan Love. It seems like everyone's sleeping on the Vikings. I get it. They're not as good as what their record said they were last year. They still got a good chance to win this division.
Absolutely. The Vikings have a good team. They have a lot of weapons. They're a team that we have to battle each and every year. Yeah, Detroit, we split with them last year. Probably should have won both games against them last year. But they're dangerous. I mean, even with everything, like you said, that's going on with no Dalvin Cook and, you know, Adam Thielen not being there anymore, they still have a lot of weapons on both sides of the ball, and they're a team that has to be respected when you start talking about this division.
I know a lot can change from now until the start of the season. It's only a month until you'll see the Lions kick off against the Chiefs in that first game of the year like you were talking about. What do you think the Lions can show people in that first game of the year up against Kansas City?
Yeah, I mean, what they're going to show is their grit. That's the word in Detroit is grit, that grit and determination. And that's what you're going to get out of the Lions. Believe me, going into that game, the one thing you're going to know about the Detroit Lions is they're going to fight you for that whole 60 minutes. You're going to be in for a fight, and I expect that out of them, against Kansas City on Thursday night to open the season up. I mean, that's a tall task going up against the Super Bowl defending champs in their home, raising their banner against the best quarterback or the best player in this league. But, hey, that's what challenges are for. The Lions love to put challenges in front of them to see if they can conquer those challenges. And that's a big one to try to conquer on Thursday night opening the season.
Lomas Brown, I will tell you what the key is for the Lions this season, and I don't think anyone else is saying this. If people know your story, you were a great trombone player in high school and then eventually found your way to the football field when someone said, hey, I don't think you have a career in the trombone. Let's get you out there and play some offensive line. I think you have to fire up the squad, dust off the old trombone, and play the trombone for the Lions before each and every game. They'll be undefeated.
Hey, you know what, Zach? So I'm going to start working on those lung exercises so I can hold those notes out. So I got you, my good man.
You'll be playing the trombone all the way to Las Vegas for the Super Bowl.
I love it. I love it.
He's the great Lomas Brown. Lomas, always great to hear your voice. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Zach. Take care.
Now back to the Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. So you know this, and I know this. Everybody in football right now is chasing the Kansas City Chiefs. It doesn't mean that you can't find a way to beat them. You saw Tampa Bay with the great Tom Brady do so a few years back in that 2020 season coming off a Chiefs championship. Then the year after that, you had Joe Burrow and that Cincinnati Bengals defense find a way to outduel Mahomes in that second half of that AFC title game. And last year, a lot of people were jumping off the bandwagon of Kansas City saying no more Tyreek Hill. Now they're vulnerable. And who gets the last laugh? It's Kansas City defeating Cincinnati in that AFC title game. And then a few weeks later, even though Philadelphia had a 10-point lead in the Super Bowl, they found a way to come on back. And that defense for Philadelphia, which was a great defense, they were slipping and sliding all over that field, and they couldn't find a way to contain Patrick Mahomes for the majority of the game. They did a fine job in that first half, but in the second half, Mahomes was just sensational in that contest. So you look at the NFL right now with Kansas City is the champ, so to be the champ, you got to beat the champ. This question more so is for the AFC, but if you look at the NFC, there's really only two teams that I feel, if they go up against Kansas City, they could find a way in a Super Bowl to beat them. And first and foremost, it's the Eagles. They gave Kansas City everything they could and then some, and they lost the game. And then you see the 49ers, same story a few years ago. Jimmy Garoppolo, I know he's no longer there, but he outplayed Mahomes for three quarters. And then in the fourth quarter, with about 7.5 minutes to go in that game, it just changed. So you take a glance at the NFC, I know Dallas on paper has a great defense. Offensively, they have talent, but I don't trust Dak Prescott in a big spot. No one in the NFC North, Vikings go win a playoff game, but I don't think they'll win more than that. The Lions have a lot on offense. Is their defense ready to take that next step? No one in the NFC South. And you look at the NFC West, we already talked about the Niners. Like, I like Seattle on paper, but am I picking Seattle to beat Kansas City in a Super Bowl? No, I wouldn't do that. I would, even though I'm optimistic about the Seahawks, and I think they could be the third best team in the NFC, I'm not telling you I'm going to trust Geno Smith over Mahomes in a big game. And I look at the Niners, to be fair, the Niners, I even have some concerns against them up against the Chiefs if they got to a Super Bowl. Not because of the Niners' defense, but am I trusting Brock Purdy, Trey Lance, if it gets to that point, to defeat Patrick Mahomes and outdo Patrick Mahomes? No, I think we're kind of in a similar spot where Garoppolo was a few years ago. So you look at the AFC, and the first team that jumps out to you on dethroning Kansas City, it's Cincinnati. And we'll get into more of this later with Ja'Marr Chase saying maybe Joe Burrow shouldn't play week one. As long as Joe Burrow is healthy by the playoffs, I'm going to operate under the assumption that he will be, just dealing with the calf strain. We've seen Kansas City not only get defeated by the Bengals, but it happened three times, twice in the regular season and one in the AFC Championship game. And then Kansas City got their revenge last year. So those two teams, even though Cincinnati doesn't have the Super Bowl, the last few years, they've been neck and neck. And in one year, Cincinnati beat them. The other year, in the AFC Championship game, it went to Kansas City. But those games have been really close. So the team that has done the best job in trying to dethrone Kansas City has been Cincinnati. Now, they talked too much crap last year defensively, led by Mike Hilton with that Burrowhead nonsense going into Arrowhead, and they didn't deliver. But after that, you look at the AFC, I'm not going to count out Buffalo. Now, I have Miami winning the AFC East. It does not mean I think the Bills are going to be putrid this year. If Miami met Buffalo in a playoff game, even though, and you could try to figure this out, I picked Miami to win the AFC East, I'd probably feel more confident about the Bills. But the Dolphins played them great three times last year. Beat them once, lost to them twice, but they went into that AFC wildcard weekend with Skylar Thompson and almost beat the Buffalo Bills. But I look at the Bills, they've been so close. They've been able to defeat Kansas City in the regular season, but come playoff time, they've had leads, and they've not been able to hold them. But you have that quarterback in Josh Allen. It's going to be, can Von Miller get off, you know, get that team off the field? And look what happened last year. Von Miller against the Chiefs, we all remember, comes off the edge. I think it was Teron Johnson who made the interception, but that was because of the pressure of Von Miller. Once they lost Von Miller for the year, that season changed drastically for the Buffalo Bills. If you look in the North, outside of the Bengals, if Lamar's healthy, you look at what happened. The Bengals almost didn't even make it out of wild card weekend last year. And that was with Tyler Huntley at quarterback for the Ravens. So I'm not going to sleep on the Ravens in terms of if they go up against Kansas City, that they could get the job done. Because we've seen Lamar play well against the Chiefs, but look at the team that you compare, right? The Kansas City Chiefs the most to in terms of having a chance to beat them, it's the Bengals. And last year, the Ravens almost beat the Bengals in a playoff game without their starting quarterback. The South, Jacksonville, I think is dangerous. I do. Jacksonville, to me, is a team that defensively they need to be more consistent, but Trevor Lawrence is the real deal, and they made the second round last year. And then in the AFC West, if the Chargers could just put it all together and Brandon Staley could find a way to coach himself, you know, into favorable waters in the NFL, the Chargers are always a team that they could get really close. And they were close last year, but until that coach finds a way to get away from some of his craziness, there's always going to be questions. So if I had to give you three teams, best shot of taking down the Chiefs in the AFC, it'd be the Bengals one, Bills still two, and I put a lot of stock still in the Jacksonville Jaguars. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Let me get to Kevin in Missouri right up here before we get to the break. 855-212-4CBS. Kevin, what do you got?
Yeah, I'm thinking that the Chiefs will probably not do as good this year because of their not getting some like good spots in the NFL draft. And also, I think the Pittsburgh Steelers may do better this year. I just want your opinion on it.
The Steelers could be a team that I could see them making the playoffs, but is anyone really going to question the Chiefs roster heading into this year? We all just did that last year, where it was, oh, they don't have enough surrounding, you know, Mahomes once you get rid of Tyreek Hill. And what did they do? They won the Super Bowl. So as long as you have 15, and as long as that offensive line is competent, I don't want to hear about you didn't like some of the draft picks. I don't want to hear that. And we'll see if the Chris Jones situation can get figured out from a contractual standpoint. But the formula is not crazy here for Kansas City. It's Andy Reid finds a way to design great plays. I know they don't have Bienemy anymore. Mahomes to Kelsey is unstoppable. And they'll have enough other pieces to find a way to get it just to work. And defensively, the 2 years they've won Super Bowls, we've seen Spagnuolo's defense not be great, but find a way to make timely stops. So if Kansas City doesn't win it this year, it's not because, oh, they don't have enough talent and they didn't draft well. It's because the AFC is really damn good and only takes one good performance by another team to get the job done in the playoffs.